Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, we visit with Mr. Chris Milam, president of Hampton's Meats in Hopkinsville, Kentucky. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
Hey, Jay.
David, how are you doing this week? You had a long week?
I have had a long week. We started calving this week. This is recorded in January. But yes, we started calving. And luckily, we had moved all the cows to the barn Sunday afternoon late. And we had the lovely winter weather that I'm also fond of, and snow. Then we've had some ice, and we've had some more snow. And so, I have not contacted my son to see if we have had any more calves, because I'm out of town. So I'm not sure if I want to call and want to know, or that kind of stuff. So it's this time of year is rough on cattle when it's this kind of weather.
Yeah.
And then next week is supposed to rain all week, I think, and be in the 40s, and that's not much better.
The fact that you've got a facility and got a way to get them up and inside.
Oh yeah.
Makes a big difference, though.
Yeah, And Jay and I had talked, texting or doing something one day this week, and I said, those calves being in the dry is a game changer. I mean, it really is. It can be cold, and that's okay.
Right.
But as long as they're dry is the main thing.
Well, I'd say no news is good news. If he's not calling you,
yeah,
things are probably working just fine.
You took the words right out of my mouth, because that's what I was thinking.
I'll sure take it. I'll tell you. When I got up this morning, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get home tonight or not, but it has melted off out there now. I think it's good. And Jay actually drove up this morning.
And I just talked to another agent that left a couple hours ago to head home. And I just checked on her, and she just pulled back into Union County, and she said the roads are in good shape.
So. Good deal.
Yep. Yeah, everybody should be good tonight.
Yeah. I think this afternoon things will be a lot better for a lot of people moving around. So, got a guest with us today, Mr. Chris Milam. Hello, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing the best. Glad to have you here with us. No stranger to any of the three of us. I introduced you as president of Hampton Meats, but you've wore a lot of hats through the years, and one of those was county agent for a little while there in Logan County.
That's right. I think for about 10 years, from 2004 to 2014. So I'm sitting here across the table from you guys thinking about past storytelling
don't try
not to laugh about looking at Jay straight in the eyes, lots of good times, a lot of great work, and it's certainly a pleasure to be with you.
Absolutely.
I just want to clarify, those stories that he's referring to are about the two fellas and not me.
That's right. No, you're exactly
it's
right.
It's more like the one fella and not me and you is the deal.
Well, Chris was in the situation, the area there where he worked in the Mammoth Cave area. I've been no secret about it. Those are some of my best friends in this business, and we've hung out a lot together. We've traveled a lot together and done a lot of things, so we're glad to have you here, and glad your memory's as good as it is.
Yep. Have you had Brandon Bell on this podcast?
No,
so if you could put Jay and Brandon together, I don't know how safe it'd be.
I don't know.
That edit button would probably be used quite a bit, but it would be a lot of fun.
It would be interesting.
Yeah.
It would be
a lot of fun stories, too. I agree.
Mentioned, I think at the introduction, I said president of Hampton's Meats in Hopkinsville. That's not entirely true, because y'all are in Russellville as well. But won't you just talk a little bit about your business and how you came to be in this business?
Well, so as you mentioned, I was with Extension for 10 years, from 2004 to 14, and I left there and went to work at Champion Pet Foods, sourcing their ingredients nationally, and did that for 7 years. During that time, my boys grew up, and I've got three children. The younger two are boys, Andrew and Zachary. And if you've been by Hamptons, you've likely met or seen one or both of those boys. And I was at Champion, and my partners, the H&H Sheet Metals folks, the Holloways, they had came to me one day and said, "Hey, let's build a slaughter plant." And I said, "All right." And so we started planning and talking and chatting. This was on the heels of COVID. And you guys all know the impact that had on food chain security and being able to get things. So the slaughter plant deal was a pretty popular conversation. And so we decided to move forward with that and rendered a full set of plans, architectural plans. And the boys, essentially, I was going to stay put where I was at. I was going to kind of help with the quality assurance deal, kind of manage from a bird's eye view. The boys were going to do USDA custom 50, 60 head a week and build a plant there in Russellville. And the very day, and I kid you not, this is the honest truth, the very day that we decided that we were going to break ground on the location and open up a bank account and get started, I left meeting with Ricky and Adam, drove back to Auburn to Champion, pulled in the parking lot, and it was Ernie Hampton on the phone. And he said, I'll sell you a business already established. And this was July. We'd been talking since November the year before. And I, as bad as I hated to, I called Ricky and I said, hey, we need to pump the brakes a minute. We need to go talk to Ernie. And so the conversation started. Long story short, we closed on the business and took over November 1st of 21. And Hampton Premium Meats is now it's always been a USDA inspected facility, but we're 100% USDA, which means nothing different other than we don't do custom per se. We do everything USDA custom. That way, there's no question if you decide that you want to sell some meat, you just go to your freezer and you can pull it out and sell it to your neighbor, and you don't have to worry about anything else. So we do that. We are also now, and I'm happy to say, third-party audited, a BRC audit, which is part of the Global Food Safety Initiative that for food safety. We actually just scheduled this week our second audit for this coming May to renew that certification. And you know, we've got quite a bit of growth plans going on. We've cleaned the plant up. We've separated retail out. If you come and see us, and we get people every week, it blows my mind that go in the old retail location. And we've been there a year, Jay, February the 6th. So I'll be walking across, and I'll say, ma'am, retail's in the building next door, you know. And so it's great that those customers are coming back. Retail has actually grown in the last couple months and picked up. And we're happy to see that it first half of 23 was pretty slow in retail and wholesale, but we are seeing some increased traffic there. And we've added a grill. We've expanded our meat cases. We've expanded the Kentucky Proud items that are in there. We've got a lot of different things that we just simply the Hamptons never had room for.
Because it was crammed all in that little hole there that you came into.
I'd like to have all the money that Ernie made in that little hole in the 40 years that he and his dad owned that business.
Yep.
But, you know, I'm one of those people that the first time I went back after the new business was up and running, I walked in the old building, and it's essentially almost like a break room. There's a time clock there, and that's how small that room is. When you think about the business that rolled through there for years, and I used to do a lot of business with them when I worked right down the road. It was it was a world of difference. But your new facility right next door, you moved in, and if folks have not been there, take a trip up to Hopkinsville and take a look at it, because it's night and day difference. First of all, it's twice the size at least. But you've got a lot more people working in there. They're very visible, very helpful, clean. It's just really, really nice.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. That was one of our things. We wanted to be different, and we changed up the meat cases from what they were. Everything was prepackaged kind of before. Now we've traded up. You can come in and you can pick whatever steak or pork chop you want out of whatever's in the case, you know, and we'll wrap it up for you and get it ready to go. So presentation is a lot. We've worked extremely hard on temperature control and bacteria control and all those things that impacts color and shelf life and that sort of thing. And I'm not going to say we're perfect by all means, but we can truly see it in our grind, the steps forward we've made and how long we can leave that in a retail case.
You know, I think anybody would agree that walking into a turnkey business, would have light and day advantages above and beyond trying to build your own. Yep. And talk just a little bit about some of those extended businesses that do business with Hamptons, have in the past, like restaurants, other meat counters, things like that. Then and try to explain to folks maybe some of the footprint that Hamptons has across Western Kentucky and Tennessee.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's first, it's good to know that there essentially there's three businesses under that roof. We have the USDA slaughter facility, and we're slaughtering anywhere from 300 to 400 head a week. Last year, and we ended 2023 at just slightly over 16,000 head for the year.
Wow.
That's up 2,000 head from the year before. So we did see some good growth in that part last year. Part of that's due to, one, when we got there, they were not doing any taking on any new custom accounts. So we obviously reinstated that. We added a smokehouse, so we have the ability to do value added from the smoking, curing standpoint. We got rid of the old, we didn't get rid of it, I took it out of the building, the tumbler that a lot of people use to cure meats with, and we went back to the more traditional way of rubbing that cure in and letting it set for 8 to 10 days or 20, whatever it is we're curing, and that's the way we do all of our bacon. And hams. We put them in a stainless steel gondola. They're in a 38 degree room, and we put bacon cure down, and we let them set 7-8 days on bellies, about 20-21 days on hams. We do jowls, we do pork loins, we do all those things, and then they go into the smokehouse. And Andrew, my oldest son, he's in charge of the plant, but he does the smoking. So that smokehouse is his baby. And I'll have to say he's doing a phenomenal job. We're to the point now where we're talking about boxing bacon up, our own platter bacon up, and selling that way. And we buy a lot of bacon, and we sell a lot of bacon. So USDA processing plant is one of those three businesses. We have the two retail locations, that one there in Hopkinsville, then another smaller location in Russellville, and then the wholesale business. And, you know, I send trucks out 5 days a week. And three trucks on 3 days and two trucks on the other 2 days, and then we fill in the gaps. But we go from Nashville to Dover, Tennessee, to Southern Illinois, to Bowling Green, Paducah, Mayfield. I mean, we hit all of pretty much West Kentucky and Tennessee. And a truck in Louisville today, we'll have a truck in Louisville 1 day a week and dropping deliveries. And so... You know, we're continuing trying to grow that. That's that wholesale business. And if there's any of our customers listening, we first off, I want to thank you. And secondly, as you know, it's a pretty small profit margin, and so you've got to do volume to make it work. And we obviously want all of our customers to be successful too. So it's a struggle some days getting trucks out on time and to the people that need it the fastest. We're certainly committed to trying to make it work and keep supplying all the great people and the small retailers and stores that have bought for so many years.
Well, Chris, I know you have obviously made some improvements to the retail space. Talk about some of the improvements that you made to the plant itself.
Yeah, absolutely. So what I did in my 7 years at Champion Pet Foods was source ingredients for a pet food company. This was a super premium pet food company, so I spent all of my time in and out of processing facilities literally all over the world, you know, from Ireland to New Zealand to Australia, Spain, everywhere. I've seen them from probably what I'd say on the low end to the very, very best, most modern, to where they've got robots that replace 3 or 4 guys breaking down a lamb carcass in southern Australia. You know, I kind of have seen a little bit of that. I'm not saying I'm an expert by all means, because I'm not a meat cutter. So we came in and we kind of had a vision, and we talk about it. The first thing that the commitment that I had made to all the people that I had worked with to that point was that I would get a third-party food safety audit. So in order to do that, I needed to get separation from the plant, from retail and wholesale. I had to get them out of the building. There was no way I could pass that audit, because we couldn't control people. We couldn't control air. There was not a lot of control over some of the processes, just because of all the closeness of employees and meat cutting and the overlap and all that. So that's a huge thing. If you were to walk in to that plant like you used to when we took over to the offices, I think the first thing you'll notice is it's 38 degrees. Man, it's cold in here.
Yeah.
Because it was never below 55 until we got that separation. And we took off the old box meat program area upstairs, and we put those refrigeration units in there, and it's cold.
Yeah.
And we're continuing to make it colder, and that's certainly impacted the quality of the product we're putting out for all of our customers.
Sure.
So that's one thing. We've, as part of the audit, and the audit drove a lot of this, but we have sanitation company that comes once a month, and we've got, you know, we've got soap and sanitizer on the wall in several locations through the plant. We've got those foamers at the entrances and exits of the plant now for mm-hmm. people that walk through, for combos that go in and out. So we've taken food safety to another level. We put a whole new set of holding pens around back. We have eight large holding pens with automatic waters that are heated. And I'm happy to say the last couple mornings when the windshield's below zero, they have not frozen, so they do work. They're concrete that we bought out of Iowa, so they work well. And for all you livestock producers that haven't been to see us, that maybe were there in the past, there is no backing up required to unload. You simply drive around and pull through. We'll shut a gate behind you. And all of that issue of backing up and trying to get unloaded is not an issue any longer.
The when I took some cows up there last winter, and the poor lady in front of me, that was when you had to back up to the, you know, the small, it was a pretty small area, and I thought, oh boy, I'm gonna be here a minute.
Yeah.
But she got her in there finally. But
well,
we've had a few of those
cases before we got switched over where we, you know, we'd have to help out and assist a little bit. And it was a challenge. There was not a lot of room, but we do have some expansion plans planned. I don't know. I'm not gonna sit here and tell you we're gonna break ground in the next month or so, because I don't know that that'll be the case. But we do intend to increase carcass cooler size and space, which will help us obviously with volume, but also with hang times. As part of that will be a climate controlled loading dock. So there's a lot of businesses that since COVID have started processing their own meat. They don't slaughter, they just cut and package. And so we send quite a few primals and quarters out in combos, and this will allow us to do that upstairs, outside the process, what we call upstairs, on the loading dock, outside the process, straight off the rail in a refrigerated area. And it'll just be much cleaner, be a lot easier on my guys that are having to today lift those quarters of beef and combo them up. And so we're looking forward to getting that done, along with a lot of other things that will come along with that expansion.
Yeah. If you hadn't been up there, you should go check it out and go see Chris and them, because, I mean, it is – heads and tails above what it used to be. And I mean, just the improvements that y'all have made just from the outside, you know, not even looking inside the plant, but just from the outside is amazing.
Well, we cleaned it up. I'm one of those guys that I can't stand clutter, and the you know, I'll walk around, pick up sticks, gloves, whatever that seems to find its way to the parking lot. And we've cleaned it up. We're trying to keep it clean, and the inside we're pretty satisfied with, you know. We got guys working, electricians in there now, removing old wires that, you know, we don't know where they go. Identifying breakers,
or what they were.
And in all fairness to the family before, I mean, you know, that business was built in 1975, and it's expanded over the years. There's been a lot of additions to it, and you know, we're somebody at some point's got to come in and try to clean it up, and we're just gradually working off our list.
Now, I will tell you one of the things I used to do, Chris, that y'all don't do, that I'm going to suggest to you.
Okay.
When I was a kid, they made their own crackling.
I knew that's what you were going to say.
And he used to let you go back there, and you could just get you a bag of cracklings. Now, if you get that going, you let me know, my friend.
I will do I'll that. Be there. To no surprise to you, I'm sure I get asked about cracklings and fat back all the time. Ironically, we are recording this at the Kentucky Pork Producers annual meeting. And if we could just make these hogs a little bit fatter, where we got some back fat to save there, then we might have a little better luck getting some cracklings cooked.
You know, when you're a kid and you go back there and see that, and I don't know what that was back there, but I mean, it was in the tub fools, you know, and you're just amazed at that. You know, of course, I was 8 or 9, 10 years old, but
Well, you'll
been many years ago.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you'll be happy. I grew up cooking cracklings too, and stirring lard out over the old kettle, and so it's a pretty dear place in my heart too. So we have with the addition of the smokehouse, I'll tell you, Andrew has made some beef tallow inside the smokehouse, and we're selling it in little 1 pound 16-ounce containers in retail. Don't do a lot, don't sell a lot, but you know, it's just one of those things. We're trying to be innovative a little bit and do something. I, of course, I can't do any ready to eat in the plant just because of further testing and raw meats and all that. So a ready to eat facility is pretty close to the forefront of my mind, to where I could do some ready to eat items, and cracklings would obviously be one of those things. And we've looked at several times a kettle to cook and do lard and beef tallow just for that specific reason. But we can make the lard in the smokehouse. We can get that smokehouse hot enough to melt fat.
You mentioned it there, though. We're killing a different hog nowadays than what we were 30 years ago, and that's one of the biggest differences in not being able to supply that product.
Yep.
Talk just a little bit about maybe the variability in animals that you do bring in today, whether it's hogs or beef cattle or sheep or whatnot.
Well, of course, you know, like I said, we're killing 300 to 400 a week, and a large portion of that, probably 95%+ of those are for other people. So we call those USDA custom, whether large or if you just do one a year. So you can imagine the variability, whether I'm killing sheep, goats, hogs, or beef, is all over the board.
I saw it first thing when I pulled around back areas.
Yeah, and we do a religious kill twice a week, and you know, a lot of those are the intent of that, of those customers, is to have a lean beef, for instance. So a lot of those are very small and very lean, no fat required there. So you'll see a little bit of everything, but you know, I unloaded a hog for a lady here right before Christmas or right after Thanksgiving, and she pulled around back and had the crate in the back of her truck. And I told the boys, I said, one of y'all need to come help me. I don't want to smell like a hog the rest of the day. Sure. And anyway, I went back there, and it was a little 40-pound pot-bellied pig, you know, and her husband was deployed. And she said, I told him, he wants bacon. I said, ma'am, you know you're not going to get very much. I know, I've told him. And so anyway, we had a good conversation. She's wearing a Georgia Bulldog shirt. And I said, that was the week before Georgia and Alabama played. And I'm glad it was a week before, not the week after. You know, anyway, it was very good. And he got back from his deployment, and he came and picked the meat up. Anyway, we see everything, you know. And we try to accommodate, and we do. And, you know, one thing I told my team when we got over there is, you know, there's some days you're going to need to educate. You know, I said, coming from Extension, and you guys know how it is, I said, don't let me go to a cattleman meeting and get cornered by a producer that says he didn't get all of his meat. I said, if he brings you a 750-pound live weight cow, I said, tell him, you know, he's probably not going to get about 200 pounds maybe in a package when it's over with.
Yep.
I said, explain it to him. And we do a very good job of that. I even printed off some publications from different universities and had those available when we first started. But now, with the communication we've got from the producers with our team on doing cut sheets, you know, they say, hey, because we have on our cut sheet, we need a 50-pound minimum to do a chorizo sausage or something like that, just because the equipment is going to hold 5 to 8 pounds of that.
What a run size would be. Right?
And then our seasoning's in either is 50-pound to 100-pound batches is the way it comes. So, you know, in order to be to do it right and to where you get exactly what you're asking for, we ask for that minimum. And so during that whole process, we do educate those guys, and we're able to answer a lot of questions that they just, because you get some that just don't know. Same way with hang times.
Yeah.
You know, we had had a customer a year or so ago came in, unloaded a beef. Now I want to hang it 21 days. And I unloaded him. And I said, sir, you know, your beef, the live weight was like 650, 700 pounds. It was small. And he said, it's the only second one I've ever done.
Yeah.
I said, you need a big beef with some fat cover if you're going to hang for an extended period of time. Because at the end of the day, when we have to trim the growth off of that, and it's normal, that's normal. It has nothing to do with anything other than just humidity and aging. You know, you're not going to get much. Your yield's not going to be very good. And so that whole process, he said, well, I appreciate you telling me that. He said, I had no idea.
Yep.
He said, I was just told by a neighbor I needed to hang it. Yeah. And, you know, so we do, we try to talk and we try to make everybody aware. And, you know, and the other thing I told them, I said, look, you know, we're human. If we mess something up, don't load their truck and let them go home and then find it. Tell them. Mm-hmm. And if we need to make something right before you leave, we do that. Yeah. And but transparency is the key to success in whatever you do, in my opinion. And the guys and gals do a tremendous job of trying to ensure that you get exactly what you're asking for.
Yeah, Chris, talk a little bit about, you know, obviously COVID has made it where, you know, everybody's wanting to do their own beef now.
Mm-hmm.
Talk a little bit about that trend and about, you know, maybe some things folks need to know that they don't know.
Well, I'll tell you, we struggle or have a lot of conversations, not really a struggle so much, you know, with labeling. Labeling is huge, and people they'll just decide, hey, I want to sell some meat, and I want to put, you know, certain Angus beef or Wagyu beef or Hereford beef or something like that on the label. We can't do that. You have to have prior USDA approval. That is considered a claim. Mm-hmm. Now, you can get it. It's just a process. Mm-hmm. So, you know, for those of you, you know, that want to get into meat business or raise livestock and sell meat, I highly encourage you to do so. I think it's great. Develop your market. Know what your market is first. Yeah. Because if you fill your freezer up and then you try to sell it, you're likely not going to have what your customer wants. And so, you know what your market is, know who your clientele are, and then give yourself plenty of time, ample time, to develop that label. If there's no claims, we can print you just a generic label with a farm name on it or an individual name, all that, with the establishment number, safe handling instructions, lot numbers, Julian dates, all that stuff. We can do that. Or we can get you with our label company. They can customize a label with a farm brand or logo on it, a farm name, whatever. That doesn't require any pre-approval. There's just a little time to get it designed with that company. But if you're doing grass-fed, antibiotic-free, certain breeds, anything like that, you got to have approval because we can't print it. They will not allow us to put it on a package of meat unless it's approved through USDA. And we can certainly help get you connected with those folks to get that done. But I'd say know your market, know what your market wants, your clientele. You know, you may be in one of those areas where clientele will spend more on higher value cuts of meat than others. You need to know that. And
you know, they do need to know that, but when folks get into that business, and I think we've everyone worked with a producer that faced this, they need to know what to do with the rest of that produce as well.
Mm-hmm.
Every person that I ever worked with that maybe was looking at a freezer beef type business, you know, a beef producer that was wanting to add some value into their herd, ground beef was that big stumbling block for almost every one of them. Is they first of all didn't realize they were going to have so much ground beef, depending on the size of the animal. Second of all, they really had no firm grip on what it was going to take to market that much ground beef.
Yeah.
So when you said knowing your market, that to me rings home from several different accounts.
Yeah, I actually made a comment to a gentleman out here just a few minutes ago. We were talking about ground pork. But, you know, I used to say this when I was raising limousine cattle. I used to say, you know, if you can develop a market for your bulls first, the rest of it's pretty easy. It's the same way with meat. You know, any of your trim, your ground pork, your sausages, your hamburgers, you know, find a home for that. You know, sell it at cost or whatever you've got in it to get it moved and keep it rotated like it should. Mm-hmm. Make your money on those value-added cuts and those high cuts, and that will allow you to slaughter and harvest many more head per year than trying to do it the other way.
When I look at the explosion, really in the last 15 years, but especially the last 10, when I look at the explosion of say, Hispanic restaurants, Mexican restaurants all around the state, every town's got two or three anymore. Even small towns at least have one. There is more of a market now for some of those trim type cuts than there has ever been.
Yep.
And that market's out there. You just might have to beat the bushes and find it. But on that same hand, our consumers, our end consumers, could be preparing those same dishes at home and making use of those cuts from a processor like yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I tell the guys there all the time, it you know, with what labor and operational costs are these days, we don't make a lot of money processing. We have to be able to sell and capture everything. Mm-hmm. And you know, if it's a tongue, if it's cheek meat, if it's oxtail, if it's liver, hearts, whatever, you know, we need to sell it. And I don't currently harvest tripe. A tripe room is pretty high on my agenda with this expansion. Probably, once again,
that'd be something that a lot of our
that's right.
You'd see in some of these ethnic type
restaurants. And with my background too, I also know that there's a lot of use in pet food for that as well. And
right.
And that's several pounds a week that I throw away because I don't have the ability to clean and harvest. So all of those things are very important. And we harvest, most of our customers keep those tongue and cheek and the organ meats because of the Hispanic population. Many of them have Hispanic employees that they give it to. And those that have storefronts, they obviously are selling it as well.
You mentioned doing religious kills. I know when I was working just down the road from the plant, before you were ever involved with it, a lot of times I would pop in to pick up for whatever to take home, and I would see people picking up a goat or maybe a lamb, something like that. Mm-hmm. For our listeners that are not aware of that service, talk a little bit about how y'all do that and what's done for these type of customers.
Well, obviously we do kill sheep and lamb and goat under USDA. So we sell a lot of mutton to barbecue places, probably some of the barbecue places that you eat at. If you have mutton, it probably came from us or one other processor in the area. And so we do several of those a week, but we kill halal twice a week, and we deliver those carcasses to Nashville. So if you were to pull around on a Monday or a Thursday and unload livestock or simply come around to look, if you're there first thing in the morning, you're going to see probably anywhere from 50 to 120 sheep and goats back there. And
wow.
And those get harvested under halal. We have somebody that comes in and blesses those. He's actually one of the customers too, but he's certified to do that. And he drives up from Nashville, and the next morning we load those, we bag them and tag them and load them on a truck and deliver them to about 15 or 16 different markets around the Nashville and the suburbs outside of Nashville, mm-hmm. all the way down to Murfreesboro. It's another one of those things. It's pretty intense for my drivers. You know, I've got to where I send two on those big days. Today he's actually delivering. I only sent one guy, but you know, he had 17 beef and 30 small animals today, so not an overload, but it's a lot of work. And we're happy to have the business. That seems to be a part of the business that's growing. And we're looking at even getting into a halal certification on the processing side, which is like another third-party audit, mm-hmm. To be able to cut and package and label as halal. We've had some interest from some school systems and things like that of wanting some halal for their diverse yeah. cultures.
Sure. I can remember years ago being in a packing plant in Aurora, Illinois,
mm-hmm.
and that was kosher kill day,
yep.
and had a rabbi there on the floor, and all day that day, that's what it was. Matter of fact, and I forgive me for not knowing the specific steps, but they had an imam there doing basically the same thing on an opposite line, but
right.
you know, it was just their rituals that needed to be observed, so
yep.
And they were that was their day, whatever day that was of the week. They were there every week on that day to
yep.
to make those lessons.
Yeah, the past couple of weeks with Christmas and New Year's falling on a Monday, and our big halal day is Mondays.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then this past week was Martin Luther King Day on a Monday, and then the weather on top of that. So we're quite anxious to get back on a schedule and get everybody settled back in, because
yeah.
it has certainly been a challenge.
Well, I think it's a great example of what we in Extension, that you can relate to, you know, spending 10 years in Extension, the educational part of it. And you've talked a lot about education,
mm-hmm.
and you've educated your staff and your team, no doubt, in the way that you have been explaining what you want them to do, and also your customers and
mm-hmm.
the educational part on that. The other thing that, you know, we have all talked to producers, and I work with a lot of farmers markets folks, and talking with them and sitting down with them and talking about different things that they can do to expand their business, maybe this is just a side gig for them, but they really enjoy it and they want to get to the point where that can be their job. And a lot of times it is figuring out ways and diversifying that operation to be able to have something to sell and have customers to sell to all year long. Yep. Not just, because when we think about farmers markets particularly, we're talking about a spring to fall.
Yep.
And but having something all year long. And but that same thing is the thing that you're talking about in your business since you all have taken over is seeing, okay, what can we do? What changes can we make? What expansions can we do to make it better for our customers,
right,
to make it better for the business, and to be able to expand and be able to meet the needs of the clientele that is drastically different. Your customers, you know, there's a drastic difference in those customers and what they want and what they need and when they want it and those types of things. And so I think that that's exciting to hear about the business and what you have done and to be able to do that and make it a family business. I mean, you talked about your sons are in the business and being able, and I know that's got to be a driving point for you, that to have this business long, you know, after you're ready to step into retirement, maybe one day, probably not, but you know, it's not in us, but to be able to hand that down to that generation and maybe on, you know, further than that.
It is. And my boys and Katrina and Kenton would tell you they've probably educated me. So sure, it's been the other way around. I'm certain that's the kind of response we get, if at least some eye rolls anyway. But yeah, they do a good job. And, you know, from my standpoint, you know, I've seen a lot, good, bad, or indifferent. I'm certainly not the sharpest nail in the box. I'll be the first one to say, but I am pretty intense, and I do expect, I won't say perfection, but I want the effort to be there, and I want, sure, I want humility, and I want people to be mindful and thoughtful of others. Because, you know, at the end of the day, that's the business we're in. Yeah, we all get frustrated. I'm the world's worst. I can get frustrated. People can be demanding. You know, whether it's a retail customer or a client, it's hard because, you know, from a slaughter plant perspective, ever how many customers we got out of that 16,000 head we killed last year, they all have a different cut sheet.
Yep.
You know, and so sometimes we just mess up. You know, the guys on the table are all the same for the most part. We have a new one every now and then, but you know, sometimes they just misread something or think the expectation is one thing and it's something else. Maybe they forget and they, instead of giving you boneless ribeyes, they debone it, you know.
Right.
It's at the end of the day, it's kind of minor stuff, but it's a flaw on our part, and we try our best to make it right and make it as accurate as we can. But, you know, we want our customers to be satisfied. We want the word on the street to be positive. I don't like negativity. You know, this week we've dealt with some weather challenges, and it's amazing to me that the people that can't get to work sometimes that live a mile away, and I'm driving 35. But, you know, it's that's been the biggest learning curve for me is some of the cultural challenges. And, you know, and it's like largely due to some age differences and things like that. But, you know, I tell my boys, I say, look, you know, you can argue with me all the time, all you want. But I do have a little of experience. I do expect you to perform and take care of people, whether it's your employees or your customers. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you got something bad or negative, say you come say it to me, we'll close the door and you just let me have it. But, you know, the people that we're servicing, they come first. And we may not always like what they want. They may have a complaint. We may have messed up. We may not have. But they're generally right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so we got to fix it.
In the end, they're going to be right.
That's right.
Whether they're wrong or not.
What about marketing? I mean, and the PR piece of that? Because, you know, that's changed over the years too.
It has, and we that's one thing we need to do a better job at. I'm really, really close. I've got a new website done, and I actually talked to the lady that helped me with it yesterday. We've got to switch servers because the platform won't work. So we're getting real close to launching that new website. And it'll be Hampton Premium Meats. It'll have new pictures and things like that on there. And then I also talked to her yesterday about doing me a video loop or something to put on a TV screen, whether I'm working a trade show.
Yeah.
This one's actually for a stockyard that invited me to put one up for them at their place. So I actually had table calls made. I've never used yet. I just got them a week or so ago. So we're trying to get geared up to do more trade shows and yep. try to get out there. I really wanted to go to the Kentucky Cattlemen and set up there. I just didn't get ready. And, so I'm hoping in the future that's the boys' way of getting me out of the plant. maybe the marketing side comes to me. I don't know.
Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I will have to say, Chris, that and of course I've known you for a long time, and you and I have each other's numbers, and I'll be honest with folks out there, I can just text Chris and say, hey, I need this on this day. He said, we got you.
Yep.
Yeah.
And don't reach out. My number is not. It's all over social media. I've never. When I went to work for Champion Pet Foods, the reason I got that job was because of my contact list. I'll be 100% transparent. It wasn't because of anything I knew. It was more about who, you always hear growing up. It's not what you know, it's who you know.
Yeah.
Well, there's a whole lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
So I've got the same number I've had for 25 years or better.
Yeah.
And, so call me, text me. Text is the best way because if I'm in the plant, can't get my phone out.
Yeah.
But, or if I'm running animals in, I can respond a lot quicker than I can answer. But we're here to serve and to take care of people, and I appreciate you guys. Like I said, I spent 10 years in the same organization working with you. We had a lot of fun. We do a lot of good.
Yeah.
Working with producers and seeing people succeed is one of the best things you can do, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, well, we appreciate you and the great job y'all are doing, and you really turned Hampton Premium Meats into a brand to be recognized. So we appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you.
For sure.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, we appreciate you being here with us today. One of the things we always like to do towards the end of the show is to wrap things up with a timely tip. Mm-hmm. That might be something production-related or calendar-related, depending on the time of the year. But since you were our guest today, one of the things we thought we'd use as a timely tip is just to remind our listeners to support your local butcher shop or meat processor. Might not always be the same thing. You're certainly a meat processor, but like you said, you wholesale to a lot of other butcher shops that make those cuts as well. And if you've got a shop in your local area and can do business with them, we encourage you to do so. May still be a locally owned grocery store that's still got a meat counter where you can get those things processed.
That's right.
You know, I'll be the first one to admit that I miss those. We don't have those available to us like we did at one time, and that was sure a nice thing to ask that guy to cut you one just a little bit thicker than
the rest
of them, whenever you could. So, but Chris, we appreciate you being here with us today. We want to thank you for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.